Now, I had a cutting some time ago in the Spanish language, and this Spanish language thing gave a lot of details about a magazine called Excalibur which had been published some years ago, apparently, in Durban, South Africa. I have only a very, very brief comment on the whole matter, but it seems the magazine published some remarkable proven parallels between the life and death of President Lincoln of the USA and President Kennedy of the USA. This will so adequately reply to many querents that I will give all the details here. Let us do them numerically, as then it will be so much easier if you want to refer to them or discuss them with your friends. So here the first one is. 1. President Lincoln was elected to that office in the year 1860. That, of course, can be ascertained from history books. So, Lincoln became president in 1860, and here is the first coincidence: Kennedy became president in 1960, 100 years later. 2. It might shake you to know that President Lincoln was assassinated on a Friday. President Kennedy was assassinated on a Friday. 3. You may have read that President Lincoln was at a theater enjoying a stage show in the presence of his wife, and he was then assassinated in the presence of his wife. President Kennedy was visiting Dallas, Texas, and he was riding in a car with his wife. He also was enjoying the show, that is, the show of public acclaim, etc. 4. President Lincoln was shot in the back while sitting in a box at the theater. President Kennedy was shot in the back while sitting in a car. 5. President Lincoln was succeeded by a man called Johnson. Johnson became president after President Lincoln, but in Texas President Kennedy was killed and Vice President Johnson was sworn in as President of the USA on board an aircraft bringing the body of the late president and the living new president back to the Capitol. 6. But we have not finished with our list of coincidences, yet, not by a long way. The Johnson who succeeded President Lincoln was a Democrat from South USA, and Lyndon Johnson who succeeded President Kennedy also is a Democrat from the South, from Texas. So that is quite a good list of coincidences, isn't it? Though to show that there is more than chance taking a part in things. Enough to show that there must be some divine plan making the entity who was President Lincoln perhaps come back as Kennedy so that a task could be accomplished. All right, let's get back with. 7. Both the Johnsons had been members of the Senate before becoming president. 8. Lincoln's successor was Andrew Johnson. Now really read this. Andrew Johnson was born in 1808. But the Johnson who succeeded President Kennedy was born in 1908. 9. Lincoln was assassinated by a rather strange sort of a person, a thoroughly dissatisfied sort of person if we are to believe the report, which is now history, and that assassin of Lincoln was John Wilkes Booth and he was born in 1839. Lee Harvey Oswald who, it was stated, murdered President Kennedy appears also to have been a very dissatisfied sort of person, one who had been in trouble all too frequently. He was born in 1939. 10. To continue with our list of coincidences, Booth was assassinated before he could be brought to trial, but so was Oswald. Oswald was shot while being moved by the police, and before he could be brought to trial. 11. These coincidences, as you have seen, extend not only to the presidents and the assassins, but also to the wives of the presidents, because Mrs. Lincoln, the wife of President Lincoln, lost a child while in the White House, and Mrs. Kennedy, the wife of President Kennedy, lost a child while in the White House. 12. Lincoln had a secretary and that secretary was called Kennedy. Secretary Kennedy advised President Lincoln most strongly not to go to the theater where he was assassinated. President Kennedy had a secretary also and he was called Lincoln, and Secretary Lincoln strongly advised President Kennedy not to go to Dallas. 13. John Wilkes Booth shot President Lincoln in the back, while the president was watching a show and then the assassin, Booth ran to hide in a store. But Lee Harvey Oswald shot at Kennedy from a store and ran to hide in a theater. You just read that carefully again and see how very strange it is. One assassin shot in a theater and hid in a store, the other one shot from a store and hid in a theater. 14. Lincoln is 7 letters, And if you count up KENNEDY, you will find that it also has 7 letters. 15. If you count John Wilkes Booth, you will find that there are 15 letters, and if you count Lee Harvey Oswald, you will find that that has 15 letters. 16. It is believed that Oswald killed Kennedy and Oswald had accomplices. None of this has been actually, definitely, incontrovertibly proved. It is a matter of circumstantial evidence. No one can prove that Booth murdered Lincoln. In the same way Oswald, it was stated, had accomplices, but it has not been conclusively proved that Oswald did murder Kennedy, and it has not been proved that Oswald had accomplices. Let's face it quite bluntly, circumstantial evidence points clearly at Booth and at Oswald, but again, how much of what we could read was actual truth and how much was the press prejudging and pre-condemning a man? We do not know, and I point out this because it is another coincidence in the case of two men. 17. You will remember that the man called Ruby, who was a bit of a fanatic, killed Oswald. He shot Oswald in front of the television cameras. He just pushed his way past the police, pointed a gun and pulled a trigger. But Boston Corbett was also a bit of a fanatic. He too believed that he was doing right when he murdered John Wilkes Booth. In both cases these two men killed the man suspected and accused of the murder of a president, and in both cases it was stated that the second assassin, that is Corbett and Ruby, did so out of excessive loyalty for the president of the time. But in neither case is the actual motive established. In another book I wrote about the over-self-managing a group of puppets. Well, you think about that in the light of this information, where two presidents were elected 100 years apart. They were both assassinated on a Friday, and, look through the list again and see all the different coincidences. Now, do you seriously believe that these could be just coincidences? It isn't really possible, you know. My own belief is that Lincoln did not do his job, and so he had to come back to substantially the same job to finish what he did not do before. The only way to come back was to come back as one who would be president of the USA, which is what he did. You can take it that sometimes an overself has dress rehearsals with puppets, so in the case of Lincoln the stage was set, appropriately enough, at a theater, and a president was assassinated. Nothing was proved against the assumed murderer, and the assumed murderer was assassinated by another person. It was almost unsatisfactory, motives were unknown and nothing was ever proved against anyone. So perhaps the overself got a bit fed up with such a waste of time and effort, and another arrangement was made for 100 years later, because in the astral world time is different from here, you know. The other side of death, the astral could have sat down and scratched his metaphorical head, so to speak, and wondered what to do next. Well, by the time he had fidgeted around and scratched a bit more, 100 years by Earth time would be slipping by. One also wonders what happens now. Was that overself satisfied with the second attempt, or will there be a third? Personally, I believe that we shall yet see a president of the USA who is actually put in seclusion for being insane. Now, I know all the old jokes about presidents of the USA being mad in any case, and far be it from me to discourage them. But this time it is a serious matter. And I believe that before too long we shall see a president of the USA who has to be relieved of his duties because he is too insane to continue. I also believe that we shall see another very difficult thing. I believe that we shall see many most important and influential members of the US government indicted for communist activities, for giving aid and comfort to the enemy, and for selling out their own country. Some of you who are fairly young will see all that, because it is going to happen. There are going to be some truly horrendous things happening to the USA, so keep your radios switched on in the next few years. Chapter 6, Time is the most valuable thing a man can spend. The old man was in his new bed, the new hospital bed with the motor which lifted the headpiece up and down and which, by pressing a button, adjusted the height of the bed. Up and down he went, playing with the thing somewhat like a child with a new toy, perhaps. But it's not so easy when one cannot get about at all, when one has to lie in bed, a bed which is so low that one is prevented from even looking out of the window. Now the old man had a bed, the height of which could be adjusted by an electric motor. He thought of himself as a submarine surfacing for a look at the world. Hey! Yelled Miss Cleopatra, how the heck do you think we are going to jump on a bed if you keep altering the height like that? How do you think we can judge our distance? The old man came back to the present with quite a jerk, and hastily set the bed to go slowest. Miss Cleopatra jumped up and stood on the old man's chest full of indignation. You trying to get rid of me? She asked. Do you want to make it difficult, so I can't come and stand on your chest, hey? No, of course not, Cleo, replied the old man, but just think, if you stand up here on my chest you can look over that stupid balcony outside our window and you can see the ships in the harbor. Together they lay there looking out over the harbor. Closest was a ship unloading nickel ore, beyond that was a Russian ship very deep in the water astern but with the bows well out showing that all the forepart had yet to be loaded. A little farther, to berths farther on, actually, a South Korean ship was loading wood pulp for Korea. Don't know why they want to come here for wood pulp, said the old man, there's plenty of trees in South Korea. Oh well, said Buttercup, probably they want to do a barter or something, and they want to buy wood pulp from Canada in exchange for something else. Buttercup was definitely the expert when it came to ships and shipping. Buttercup was a specialist when it came to ships' flags. The unusual South Korean flag defeated her for just a few moments. But, anything else, Panama, Monrovia, even the old red ensign, she could distinguish it miles off. Miss Taddy looked up. What are you doing, Gov? She asked in a rather puzzled fashion. Have you got so sick that you are talking to yourself? No, of course I'm not talking to myself, I'm just making some notes for a book. Can't I make some notes, can't I speak without you interfering, Taddykins? Taddykins shook her head in puzzled amazement and then curled up in a nice compact ball and dropped off to sleep again. Suddenly Miss Cleo's ears pricked up and Taddy jerked to full awareness. Outside a strident voice came, well, I looked in the papers today and I saw my horoscope wasn't so good so I thought to myself, if you didn't have a job to do, old girl, you'd be better staying off and being in bed. But you can't do that when you gotta earn a living, when you got a man to keep, can you? The voice passed on accompanied by the mumble of some other woman, probably belching out some drivel about her own troubles. Ah yes, said the old man, that reminds me, that's a question which I had here. Let's see, where is it? He riffled through a pile of letters and triumphantly came up with the desired one. Postmark, well somewhere in one of the Far Islands, subject, what is it? Dear sir, I enclose a dollar and my birth date. Please send me a full horoscope and life reading immediately, and send it to me by return by airmail. If there is any change keep it for someone who didn't send a postal charge. Now, what do you think of that? Someone thinks that horoscopes grow on trees. They are not so easy as that, it takes time. But here is another question, what do you really think of horoscopes? Do all these people who advertise do it for a racket? A horoscope has never been right for me. What's the truth of it all? Well, the truth of astrology is this, given the right conditions, astrology can be completely accurate and successful. Given the right conditions. Let me first of all warn you against all this run-of-the-mill advertising offering to do your horoscope for a couple of dollars or a few shillings. What you get is a few printed pieces of paper which purport to be a horoscope, but that stuff is hardly worth putting out for garbage, and in my considered opinion the same can be said for all this rot which is alleged to come from computers, it just isn't worth the money. Astrology is not just a mechanical process. Astrology is a science and an art, one cannot do it all together by science, art is necessary, and one cannot do it all together by art because science is necessary. To do a horoscope properly, really accurately, that is, it is necessary to have the precise time of birth and the actual location of birth. Then it is necessary to spend many days working out various aspects, etc. It cannot be done successfully for $5 or $10. What you get from that sort of thing is just a rough, very rough, guide, which can apply to thousands of different people. I will not do a horoscope for anyone for any price because I do not believe in people having their horoscopes done. If people have a horoscope done, they feel that they just have to do everything the horoscope says, and a horoscope is not an absolutely cast iron set of conditions. A horoscope is a set of possibilities. By knowing a person's astrological makeup, one can describe what the person's appearance should be like, one can describe what the person's character should be like, and the horoscope sets the limits of what the person can be. For example, one person can have a certain horoscope which says that he cannot rise above the station to which he was born, but that he can do certain things with immense effort. The second person could have a horoscope which says that he will rise above his station and he will progress very rapidly with hardly any effort at all. If you really want to know what the horoscope is like, consider it in this light. It is a specification, an informed guess of what a person's capabilities are. To make it clearer, let us take two cars. The horoscope of a Rolls-Royce car can say that the car will be very silent, very fast, very comfortable, that it will have a certain maximum speed and it will use so much petrol every few miles. The horoscope of the second car perhaps, "Are there still Morris Minors in England?" Will say that it is a low-powered car, very, very suitable for local jaunts, that its maximum speed is such and such a figure, that it doesn't use much petrol, and it is a very nice little car for getting about in traffic. Well, people are like that. They have their specifications, only we call them horoscopes. A horoscope will not tell the eager young lady, you know, the one who is anxious to get a husband in a hurry, that she will go out and meet Mr. Right under the third lamppost as she turns to the left or to the right, or that she will meet a dark-haired young man who is busy tying his shoelaces, and it will be love at first sight. That's not horoscopes at all. That's not real astrology. That is fake fortune-telling. There are very, very few really genuine, really capable astrologers advertising. They don't have to advertise. Their fame, their accuracy, is passed by word of mouth, and if you'll one think you can fill in a coupon and send it off with 50 cents or 5 shillings and get a life reading, well, think again, for you are one of the gullible ones who really deserve to be caught in the sucker trap for thinking you can get something so cheaply. You only get what you pay for. I will not do horoscopes for any sum of money. If I do them, I do them free under very special circumstances, but in my considered opinion, no horoscope which costs less than $100 is worth having, because it means that the person who did the horoscope just did not spend enough time and take enough trouble, so all you have is just a few marks on a piece of paper. In my own case, my past was foretold by astrology with utterly stupendous accuracy. Everything that was foretold about me has happened. Sadly enough, a few things extra have happened, a few things which the astrologer didn't get around to discussing, and all the wretched extras were bad things, too. To answer a question, then, is astrology genuine? I will say, yes, astrology can be very genuine. It can suggest what a person's life will be like, it can indicate probabilities, but they are probabilities only. So do not take astrology too seriously unless you get an absolute gem of an astrologer who knows exactly what he is doing and who is completely ethical, that is, one who tells you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So many people, so many astrologers, have their information and put in quite a few stock paragraphs because they know what people want to hear. Now here is another one. My daughter's husband is a very strange sort of man. He doesn't believe in the same things as those in which I believe. He doesn't believe in occult things. What can I do to make him? The only answer that one can give here is to state most definitely that nothing can be done to help in the way in which the lady means. If a person is not yet ready to study occult subjects, then it is definitely wrong to try to force occult things at him. Everyone has a right to free choice, and whichever choice they make is entirely their own affair, and their own responsibility. If Billy Bugsbottom decides that occult stuff is all a lot of hogwash, then why should one try to persuade Billy Bugsbottom anything different? It's his belief and his choice, and it is definitely wrong to influence a person. There are so many people who write in asking how they can do a mantra to compel some poor wretch to do something which they just would hate to do, and I repeat ad nauseam that it is wrong to influence another person. Perhaps the person has some definite reason for not wanting to study astrology or occultism or how to play snakes and ladders. In the same way, it is quite wrong to expect a person to agree with us in everything we do. You should hear how Buttercup and I agree to differ. There are many things which I know from actual experience to be fact, but Buttercup is entitled to her own opinion, and if my beliefs are not always her beliefs, that is her choice and I do not influence her at all. The crummy press often print articles saying that Buttercup is a disciple of mine. They couldn't be farther from the truth. She is not a disciple of mine, nor is she a Buddhist. To start with, I have no disciples and never had any, and secondly, I believe it is wrong for people to switch sides and become a Buddhist when they really want to be a Christian, or a Christian when they really want to be a Buddhist. Being a bit biased on the matter, I always say that when a person is ready, they will become a Buddhist automatically, because the real Buddhism just means obeying the law of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Of course, I am not meaning some of these peculiar cults in England and in the USA who now call themselves Buddhist temples. That is not my idea of Buddhism at all. The real Buddhist doesn't have to go out and get converts. I am a real Buddhist. Well, on the subject of astrology, because we are, more or less, let us have a look at two other systems. Now, graphology, which is the science of reading character from handwriting, is a thing which I thoroughly endorse when done by an expert. Graphology is not fortune-telling, it is instead a most accurate method of determining a person's character, potentialities, and all the rest of it. Of course, one has to be an expert at such things. To many beginners or outright fakes base their conclusions on just one or two points in the handwriting, but one has to have about 7 confirmations before one can say with absolute certainty, without any fear of contradiction at all, that this is so or that is so. Handwriting tells character and ability and all that. It is not in any way possible to forecast the future from handwriting, and no reputable graphologist ever claims that it is. The ideal use for graphology is in assessing a person's ability for a certain job. Some years ago, Ma, to whom we now refer as Rab, did graphology for certain industrial firms, and she did it successfully. Firms would supply her with the handwriting of people who applied to the firm for employment, and then Rab would quite accurately suggest which applicant was the most suitable and give an assessment of his character and abilities. Oh, by the way, perhaps I should say how Ma has suddenly become Rab. Well, the cats thought that the first name, Ma, would remind people too much of Dinah Drightree's Ma, the char lady, and so we used instead a name which she used in a previous life, Rab. That is one of my infamous digressions, by the way. Never mind, it's better to have a digression than no book, or don't you think so? In this particular book there are going to be many digressions and there are going to be many repetitions. I have been looking through a whole series of questions, and I see that it is quite essential to have repetitions even if one or two of you do not like it. So you are being warned now that there will be a few repetitions. I can safely warn you now that you are so far into the book and, I hope, have bought the book instead of borrowing it from some library. A poor wretched author doesn't get any royalties on books supplied to a library, you know, and every book read from the library shelves is a loss of income, that is, a loss of food, to the author. People write to me and tell me that they have read part of one of my books in a public library, and now would I please tell them the answers to a lot of questions, or, if I will send them a complete set of my books, each autographed and with a photograph of me, they will try to find time to read the books. Hopeful little souls, aren't they? So, now that you've got so far and presumably have bought this book, let me say that, yes, there are going to be a few repetitions, but it's all in a good cause. I hope repetition will enable you to get all this in your subconscious. You had to practice repetition before you could do the multiplication tables, and I am trying to do something for you, help you by placing this knowledge into your subconscious. There are many firms who choose applicants largely on the basis of the handwriting, and so it's to your own interest to brush up on your handwriting. You might get a better job or more money that way. You might also get an assessment of character from a good graphologist because that will help you to overcome any weakness in character and to strengthen those which are already strong. But never, never believe that you can have your fortune told from your handwriting. You cannot. One of the original systems for telling a person's past, present and future is by palmistry, reading all those queer marks on the palm. Again, if one really knows how to do it, it is just about infallible. In brief, and assuming that you are right-handed, then your left hand will indicate what you plan to do in this life, and will indicate the equipment with which you came, that is, are you artistic, are you a plodder, are you quick-tempered or stolid? The left hand tells what one planned, but the right hand shows what one has actually achieved up to date. The average practitioner can give quite a good assessment of character from the lines of the hands and fingers, but it needs to be a far more than average practitioner to be able to tell truthfully of the past life and the probabilities for the future. Now, let me stress that point again, the probabilities. There is nothing on this earth that can say definitely and incontrovertibly what will happen to a person. There is no science, no art, no skill, no device which will say what is going to happen to a person beyond any shadow of doubt. Truthful practitioners will admit that they can tell only probabilities. Take, by way of example, some poor fellow who falls out of a plane without a parachute. Well, anyone would be justified in saying that he is virtually dead as soon as he starts to fall, because as soon as he stops falling there is a horrid splat, and he has left his mark on the earth. But, wait a moment, he may not fall on something hard. There are quite a few cases of people falling out of aeroplanes and surviving to tell the tale, which they do. In my own case, I fell out of a plane when it was on fire. I fell about 1,000 feet, and I sustained very severe spine injuries which caused a certain amount of curvature of the spine. Other people have fallen safely. There was one poor fellow who fell out of a plane and hit a haystack, and his only real danger was the fear of being suffocated before watchers could take him out, dig him out from the bottom of the haystack. He got a bump or two and a king-size fright, but he was no worse off. Another well-known case happened in Switzerland. The pilot had to leave his plane and he left without his parachute, it seems, and he fell through the cold Swiss air and landed in a deep snowdrift. His only danger was in freezing to death, and people had to dig frantically to dig him out, and his only trouble was feeling a bit chilly. So you see, any astrologer would have said that the fellow would meet his death in an air accident because the probability would be there, but the actuality wasn't. If any soothsayer, clairvoyant, astrologer, palmist, etc., etc., ad lib, tells you such a thing will definitely be, then just grab your money and run for it. You can be told probabilities, but always, always keep in mind that they are probabilities only and nothing more, nothing at all more. If you can keep your head and use a little bit of willpower and imagination, the probabilities can be overcome. There is a classic example of that. Do you know it? Well, Socrates, one of the very wise men, had his horoscope prepared, it seems, when he was a very young man. The horoscope indicated that he would be a most enthusiastic thug and murderer and would engage in all forms of villainy with great elan. The young Socrates exclaimed to himself the Greek equivalent of bud, that's for the birds, I'm changing fast, and decided to do something about it. So he channeled all his energies into knowledge, into philosophical works, and now he is revered as one of the great sages. He has made his indelible mark on the pages of time, whereas if he had just sat down under the weight of an unfavorable horoscope he might have just left his imprint on the crook's calendar of crime. So there it is, even if an astrologer or a palmist tells you something which frightens you enormously, remember, you can overcome it, you can always sidetrack bad things. By letters which I receive I gather that most of you have the impression that authors such as I recline in plush splendour and have a whole gang of secretaries waiting with bated breath to hurry to do one's bidding. I gather that many of you think that an author such as I has a Rolls Royce knocking at the door, ready to take me out. It's not so, it's not so at all. Actually, I am reclining in some discomfort in a hospital-type bed and, at the moment, through disabilities, etc., I am not able to type, So Buttercup the Benevolent is typing for me as she has typed most of my books, typed them well too, by the way. But do you know what sort of questions I get? Admittedly you know about some of them. But do you know about the questions which I do not normally answer? How would you, for example, answer this question? Tell us about such things as casting shadow through standing in sunlight? Question.